Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. Now, over the years, ACH has seen a fair share of growth and acceptance within the payments industry. This growth comes from both number of transactions and volume per transactions as well. Now, with the current pandemic and acceleration to digital payment adoption, ACH has become an even more attractive offer for different payment types across the payment ecosystem. So on today's episode, I'm joined by Mike Hurd, who is the Senior Vice President of the ACH Network Administration at Notch, and Sarah Grotta, who is the Director of the Debit and Alternative Products Advisory Service at Mercator Advisory Group. Now, in this episode, we're also going to be taking a deep dive look into ACH payments and how the payments industry has shifted since the pandemic. So there's certainly a lot to learn on today's episode. So without any further delays, let's start the show.
So Sarah and Mike, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode as we're really taking a closer look at kind of this fantastic growth story that we're seeing with ACH. So Sarah, I'm really hoping, you know, when we start with you here, if you could give us a little bit kind of a market overview to kind of really set the stage for this growth that we've seen within ACH.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. And you know, really, I think the growth that we're seeing in this first half of the year is really a story around the pandemic. I mean, really in the midst of this global pandemic, we've been tracking a lot of major changes in payment habits for both consumers and businesses. You know, payment routines that, you know, typically in the past have taken years to evolve into sort of a day-to-day habit, you know, are now being compressed in part due to this disruption, if I can use an overused phrase, you know, of the pandemic has brought implications to our everyday habits and really shaken us out of those habits in some pretty meaningful ways. You know, one payment type that we've seen some changes in use patterns has certainly been ACH. And ACH has marked some really significant gains of late. Of course, ACH was front and center in delivering the first rounds of economic impact payments and some of the other stimulus funds. And as we sit here today, you know, it appears likely that there will be another round of benefits, with much of that transacting through the ACH network too. But even beyond that direct use of the ACH network, you know, there are some other interesting trends, I think, around B2B payments, around, you know, internet payments going through ACH, and other transaction types like P2P too. You know, I think we're seeing a lot of this shift occurring because paper forms of payment are really particularly inefficient at this particular point in time. So, Michael, if you could help us out as we take a look back at the first half of 2020 and the data coming out from the ACH network, what are some of the interesting trends that we really should be aware of?
Well, first of all, Ryan and Sarah, thanks for having us today. Sarah, that's a great question. I think when we look at what the ACH networks, you know, payment volumes for the first half of 2020 is telling us, it's really been, first of all, a tale of two quarters. So for the first quarter of 2020, everything looked pretty normal in terms of year-over-year growth up until about the last 10 days of March. So we were on a trajectory of about an 8% growth rate. In the first quarter, we had fairly normal patterns for things like direct deposit, internet-initiated payments. You know, it was going to be just another, you know, robust quarter of growth for the ACH network and for same-day ACH and for the things we normally report on. And then, of course, you know, if you recall back to where you were in March, you know, that's kind of when, at least in this country, we started closing everything down. And, you know, impacts out in the real economy, payrolls, B2B supply chains, people paying bills, you know, those things start to show up in payment system volumes, including the ACH. And so for the last 10 days or so of March, It was as if the volume, fell off a cliff. Now, you know, the last 10 days of a quarter still left us with a fairly good result for the quarter when we look at it, you know, on a quarterly basis, 7.1% year-over-year growth. But we really didn't know what was going to happen moving forward. I think a lot of us felt that way about, what was going on and around in the world and about our businesses or our industries that we're in. And so when you look under the hood for the second quarter numbers, you do see a lot of variations from what you would have normally expected to see. The slowdown in the economy was counterbalanced by, a massive flood of dollars and number of payments being issued by primarily the federal government. And a substantial portion of those were paid by ACH. We saw an increase in federal disbursements in the second quarter on a year-over-year basis of an increase of $500 billion. So that's reflective of the additional dollars pumped into the economy by the federal government using the ACH network. And that took the form of the direct deposit of economic impact payments, of which there were approximately 120 million. Many states' unemployment assistance payments get paid by ACH direct deposit, and another number of other types of assistance payments, whether it was direct assistance to medical facilities or to colleges and universities, small business, the Paycheck Protection Program loans being dispersed frequently by ACH, or the grants being made by the Small Business Administration by ACH. And we just saw a lot of that type of activity, again, moving dollars in to help people and businesses through the banking system, and also leading to a increase in that type of payment system volume on the ACH. So, when we get to a full quarterly view of it, our result was fairly normal at a top line level, 7.9%, which is, I think, exactly what we reported for all of 2019. There really were some gains and some declines as we looked at various things. Interesting what some of the declines tell you about what's actually going on in the world. For example, about an 8% decrease in healthcare claim payments. These are insurance payments being provided to reimburse medical offices, doctors and dentist offices and hospitals for providing care. Well, why is that? Because a lot of doctors and dentist offices were closed, or maybe still are closed, or people were deferring elective procedures. So we see that real world impact show up in payment system statistics. Checks are another area. So for example, the check conversion types of payments that go over the ACH declined at a year-over-year rate of 24% in the second quarter. And those that represent checks being used in retail locations declined by 45% year over year. So that is literally people not being out in the stores, or to the extent that they are, not using checks anymore, so that those checks are not being converted to ACH payments. So we see those types of effects also reflected in the volumes. So a lot going on out there. Happy to dive as deep into that as you all want.
Yeah, Mike, absolutely. I think that's a fantastic overview there. And I would like to dive into some of the ways and kind of really some of the, you pointed out a couple here that it's ACH has really kind of been impacted here. And I'm really kind of glad that taking a look at this quarter one and quarter two chart, and for those of you who are following along on paymentsjournal.com, you're going to be able to view those images in the article below here. But I'm really glad that it calls out the B2B, the direct deposit, the healthcare, internet, and P2P in terms of the different types here, because I think if the story was that, hey, there's significant growth, you could see particular people kind of jumping to the conclusion of saying, well, yeah, that's because of the stimulus package. But when it's broken down by these different different types here, it really kind of paints the full picture of, no, it's not just because of the stimulus packages. ACH itself has been on the rise for quite some time, but the pandemic has kind of really just given it that extra shot in the arm, so to speak, of why people should be looking more towards ACH. So while we're taking a look at that, I know you pointed out that in, you know, kind of the last couple of days of March there, that you saw of a little bit of decline there, mainly just because of, you know, the economic reasons of what's going on, and then also the 8% down in 8% down in healthcare, and then also with the check conversions as well there too. But what are some other like really notable reasons why or how this pandemic has impacted the ACH network?
Well, Ryan, another good question. And I think I probably have two other, pretty robust examples. Internet initiated payments have been a strong area of growth for the ACH for quite some time, a decade or more. And yet even in the second quarter of 2020, we've gotten another little boost in the growth rate, and this is for things like paying bills or making account to account transfers, moving funds from one account to another, or to the extent that a merchant's will offer the ability to pay by ACH, it could account for some purchase activity as well. But what that tells us is, even more commerce and therefore payment transactions have migrated online. And subsequently, we would also expect, fewer check payments as a result of that. I think also, and Sarah, you might know this, but, credit card in particular, maybe debit card took a hit solely in their volumes early on in this pandemic, really related to the fact that people couldn't shop in person at retail locations anymore. But I would imagine that a lot of that activity moved to online e-commerce forms of shopping and payments. And so we see that with the ACH as well. Also, very interestingly, the ACH does support person-to-person payment functionality. And, that level of activity really, really leapt in the second quarter, up over 48% year over year. And again, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, if you can no longer see your friends or your family members in person, or maybe just not as much or at all, it makes it much more difficult to give each other funds or reimburse each other for activities with checks. And it makes it much more likely that those payments and that activity will move to electronic forms of commerce. And we saw, again, on the ACH, 48% increase year-over-year activity for person-to-person payments. So that kind of represents how consumers and individuals, payment patterns are shifting. I think we also see that businesses' payments activities are shifting as well. I think, one of the early inputs we received from the business world was how difficult it came to be very quickly to write checks and to receive and process checks through a lockbox or in the mail when you don't have personnel in the office. And that became a significant pain point for a number of companies very quickly. And the stories are kind of, funny in hindsight, but they're serious pain points. One being a company that had to set up a process for drive-by check signing, where, one employee would prepare the checks and put them in an envelope and Let them sit for a day or two to, I guess, self-sanitize, if that's a word, and then find something like a picnic table or something outside the office building so that a signer could drive by and open up the envelope and sign the checks and then seal it back up again and again let it sit for a day. And that's not an efficient process for making payments. And companies like that very quickly attempted to try to move activity as much as possible to electronic and remote forms, which certainly includes ACH. So while at some point we saw a decline in overall economic activity in the B2B space, you had supply chain activity that dropped off. There was also a migration of check payments to electronic payments, including ACH, to counteract that. And so for the quarter, the volume growth was just a little bit shy of 4%. So those are kind of some of the impacts we're seeing and how some of the behaviors changing. As I say, as you look under the hood, you really do start to notice some of these significant variations. Ultimately, it kind of added up, to a high level number that was fairly normal. But I think there's very little about the day-to-day activity that was all that normal.
I was wondering too if there might have been an increase in some return transactions too. I was thinking about things like automatic bill pay or subscription payments, if you will, where I've set it up so that the gym I belong to hits my account on a periodic basis and I can't go to the gym. So I want to not only maybe temporarily stop that payment, but even try and get some of those transactions returned. Is that something that's happening with noticeable greater frequency?
Well, Sarah, that's a very perceptive question, and I'll give you the answer in a couple parts. Things like automated bill payments and automatic payments for gym memberships have been an area of disruption. A number of large gym chains had to suspend, their monthly membership payments, and other things like student loan payments, particularly those backed by the federal government, also had an automatic forbearance period, initially of 6 months. And I know some additional extension of that is under consideration right now. And there were some instances initially where payments had already gone out the door, so to speak. So in these instances, those would be debits to collect those funds from consumers and borrowers. And in some cases they did advise their customers to, go to their banks and ask for the payments to be stopped. And for second quarter of 2020, we recorded an increase in stop payment returns of 11%. So I think that is demonstrating what was happening and is, indicative of that type of scenario where initially there were some instances where companies or lenders advise people to go stop payments. The other impact, though, was completely jaw-dropping. And it was something we just didn't expect. It kind of makes sense in hindsight, but, just things change like this. And you're not really sure how to interpret what's going on and interpret data. But actually, in the second quarter of 2020, insufficient funds returns for ACH payments declined by 31% year over year. And just compared to the previous quarter, the first, the decline was even greater, 40% decline in NSF returns. And again, totally an unexpected result from what we had expected. In the past, when there have been periods of financial distress, recession, typically, as people have more difficulty with their finances, that leads to an increase in insufficient funds. Not this time. So what happened out there in the world that caused that level of insufficient funds to decline so precipitously? Well, one is we already touched upon it, which is in many cases, consumers stopped spending money. So they weren't out in the stores spending, or they had things like spring break trips or summer vacation plans that wound up being canceled. And so they didn't spend on those activities and perhaps even got refunds from amounts that had already paid out or put on deposit. There were a number of colleges and universities that gave refunds of some tuition dollars or housing dollars for monies that have already been paid. Many of the major insurance companies gave out premium refunds. And then we had this influx of cash assistance under the CARES Act, the economic impact payments, as well as the greatly expanded unemployment benefit assistance payments, not just in the amounts, but also in who was eligible for them. And the totality of all that is that balances in bank accounts rose actually in the second quarter as people stopped spending, had monies refunded, and got assistance payments, as well as they stopped spending nearly as much on discretionary activity. And so that is, we think, the reasons why people had more funds in their accounts to better meet the levels of the payments they were making, bill payments especially, mortgages, rent, utilities, internet, insurance payments, and things like that. So it really did have the opposite type of effect that we were anticipating going into the second quarter.
Yeah, Mike, I think that that's a very interesting observation there. I would have to guess, though, that as, you know, obviously Congress is really kind of starting to debate in terms of extending that unemployment benefit, and you've seen individuals, you know, kind of get those refunds and have that to that, that you'd almost kind of think that within the next couple of quarters, though, you might start to see that NSF kind of normalize in a sense. Would you think that that would be accurate, given if we say, for example, that Congress does not act and extend that unemployment additional benefit that's there?
Well, Ryan, I think it's a reasonable conjecture sitting here on August 11th, but we were completely surprised by the last quarter's results. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised to be surprised again.
Yeah, fair point. Fair point there. Yeah.
I mean, we try to monitor what's happening with the so-called, you know, CARES Act 2.0 or whatever it is that might be called. Again, it's as we're recording this, it's August 11th, and negotiations on the Hill apparently have been going nowhere fast in the last week or so. So it's, I guess, anything could happen. To us, it appears like there is reasonable agreement between the parties on a second round of economic impact payments, as well as extending unemployment benefits. I think they have a difference of opinion on how much of the benefit should be, but they both are in support of extending that benefit, and maybe there's some ability to compromise there. So the areas of disagreement seem to not be around, the cash assistance payments that are being made to individuals. But it remains to be seen whether anything is going to get approved, and if it does, how much, how many payments, how much money, and those kinds of things. I will say, though, that in terms of our ability to deliver that economic assistance, the ACH network is second to none. In the first round, when those first files of payments were being issued by the IRS, they made about 81 million direct deposit payments in one day. And, our ACH network system operators, the Federal Reserve System and the Clearinghouse, were on it and managed that volume really without breaking a sweat. That's just a core competency of the ACH network. We regularly do over 100 million payments a day now, So that reflected just a slightly, you know, about 80% of an additional day's activity going into the system. And, you know, as you all know, the network has the ability to do not just standard next day payments, but can do same day payments as well. If anybody putting them in decides to take advantage of that capability to deliver funds faster. So, what might happen with a CARES 2.0, we don't know. But the ACH network is prepared and ready to serve as soon as we're called upon.
Yeah, and I certainly think that's fantastic, right? And I certainly am very, very happy with the ACH network, because I was certainly one of those 81 million who did receive their stimulus check on day one. So I was very pleased with that. But now to kind of move things in a slightly different direction here, right? Because obviously part of the growth has been because of everything that's going on with the pandemic and the stimulus checks that are going on. But then there's also just the normal growth that you've seen within the ACH network. And part of that has to do with something that Sarah talked a little bit upon, which is the declining of checks, which I also know that your CEO, Jane Larimer, who I'm a big fan of. I got to meet her at one of your events recently. Very nice individual, extremely intelligent. And she recently published an interesting blog on the declining check use. So I'm curious then, from Mike, from your perspective, what are really the key takeaways of Notch's position on checks?
Well, I think our position, Ryan, is always been that there are some key benefits of using ACH, including migrating check payments to ACH. And I think sort of the COVID pandemic experience has amplified what those benefits are and has pointed out some of the difficulties of continuing to make and receive payments by check. If I go back to the example I mentioned of the business having to set up, drive-by check writing, I think that is something that will stick in our minds for a long time, and is really kind of the kick in the pants, so to speak, of getting serious about migrating that volume to something that's easier and more reliable to do. Obviously, checks still work for a number of scenarios and for a number of parties during normal times, but clearly these have not been normal times. So, we do see that migration accelerating. I think there has been maybe an underappreciation over the last couple of years that check volume is migrating to electronic payments and to ACH pretty substantially already, maybe in the 10% per year type of range. But I think this is really accelerating that trend. We see it in the ACH volumes. We hear the stories, I guess you kind of call that anecdata, right? And, even the Federal Reserve System, we look at their published check volumes. And in the first quarter, we noticed that for the first time in recent memory, since they started posting quarterly statistics, that their, the volume of checks processed by the Federal Reserve System fell below $1 billion in a quarter for the first time ever. So, and that was a fairly significant decline. I don't have the percentage decline in front of me at hand, but it was seemed to be an accelerating decline, so to speak. I think the data shows that it's happening. I think the experience from the field, highlights why it's happening. And I think it's a good time if a business hasn't yet really gone all in on electronic payments for their accounts receivables or accounts payables, it's as good a time as any. Within the Notcha office, being who we are, we've always tried to be 100% ACH as long as we've been around. And there always have been just a handful of vendors who want to check. And I think if you try to drill into why, and it's really more just inertia more than anything, and lack of wanting to, you know, do anything differently, you know, having just to start doing something new. Well, guess what? They're doing something new right now, because if they wanted to get money, they had to get it by ACH. It was not possible for us to continue to send those handful of check payments out, you know, every month or so. So, you know, even at NACHA, we've made progress there in getting as close as we can to 100% ACH.
Yeah, I certainly think that in my mind, your example there of a drive-by signing is certainly going to stick in my mind for quite some time there. It almost kind of sounds like something right out of a mafia movie of where somebody drops the payment there and then somebody else comes by a little later and comes picks it up. But
Ryan,
with that
it's like,
being,
it's like a spy movie. You have to create dead drops to pay by check.
Exactly. You get the money is dropped off in a certain location, then you receive a check of where it is that you need to pick it up, and it's like, oh, it's the third oak tree in the park. And you're like, okay, I don't know exactly where that is. And furthermore, to your self-sanitizing checks, I think that's interesting in terms of I've never heard of just a check being left out to air dry or air sanitize, but maybe that's an opportunity for some vendor to come up with at some point, some self-sanitizing checks.
Right.
But for the last question here, to kind of wrap things up, you know, we certainly touched upon quite a bit in terms of just the growth of the ACH network in COVID-19 and the payments industry. But is there any kind of final thoughts that you want to make sure that you leave our audience with here today?
You know, I think there will continue to be some uncertainty around, you know, a return to economic growth, you know, how much and how quickly, and some uncertainty around what that means in the payment space for, you know, system volumes and, you know, levels of business activity. And certainly we've talked about uncertainty around, you know, what may or may not happen with any, you know, CARES Act 2.0 and other types of assistance payments. But, you know, the ACH network itself, you know, operated normally throughout the entirety of the you know, the hit on the pandemic. Certainly within our system operators and financial institutions, you know, planning for business interruption, business continuity is, you know, a normal part of operations. And so the network continued to operate normally throughout and is able to handle the payment volume as you know, as we start to you know, generate you know, a return to economic growth. I referenced very, very briefly the same day ACH capability, to the extent that entities you know, have the need to make more time urgent payments, you know, whether it's for those assistance payments or refunds or enabling people to transfer funds among accounts. That capability exists. We increased the dollar limit on same-day ACH payments earlier this year to $100,000 per transaction, and we saw an immediate bump in the average dollar amount of a same-day ACH payment by 40%. And then next March, we have an expansion of the operating hours coming, and that change is on track. So, you know, the utility of same-day ACH is going to be increasing. You know, even though we are in these sort of uncertain and difficult times. So I think that's probably what I'd like to leave folks with.
Awesome. Well, that is absolutely fantastic, Mike. So Mike and Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time today for speaking to me about the fantastic growth of the ACH network. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Well, thanks very much, Ryan. Always a pleasure to speak with you both.